how do we listen? The poet Joyce Sutphin gives us a little bit of advice on this topic. She says, tilt your head slightly to one side and lift your eyebrows expectantly. Ask questions. Delve into the subject at hand or let things come randomly. Don't expect answers. Forget everything you've ever done. Make no comparisons. Simply listen. Listen with your eyes as if the story you are hearing is happening right now. Listen without blinking, as if a move might frighten the truth away forever. Don't attempt to copy anything down. Don't bring a camera or a recorder. This is your chance to listen carefully. Your whole life might depend upon what you hear. Full disclosure, I spent some time this week wondering if this is just kind of a frivolous topic, a sort of fluff piece in the midst of so much hate and violence that's surging in our country and the world. Indigenous people still don't have sovereignty in our state. Significantly mentally unwell people who have no inhibition toward murder or suicide can access any kind of weapon, semi-automatic or otherwise, with no or very little struggle. Women's bodily autonomy and reproductive freedoms are being threatened, in some states absolutely removed. There are people in our neighborhood with no guarantee of a warm place to sleep this winter. Certainly no place to call their own, and so many live with the uncertainty of where their next meal will come from. We know that thousands upon thousands of children and other innocent civilians are being exterminated in the Middle East as we speak. And oh yeah, maybe Iran has a nuclear bomb. And we're facing an election in a few weeks where the possible outcome strikes terror in the hearts of many. All of this is true, and I'm doing a service about how to listen, for heaven's sake. It does matter, though. Remember the Valerie Kaur piece from last week where she advised that listening is an act of surrender, and all that's required is that we feel safe enough to remain curious? She said, listening begins in curiosity and surrender. And the truth is that no one feels very safe right now. Most of us and others we know immediately feel defensive, like we have to armor up and protect our hearts and minds from what we might hear when talking to anyone we're unsure of in terms of what they believe or where they stand. It's true, and that hypervigilance is exhausting. Do you feel it? I once read that UU minister and religious education guru Tandy Rogers wrote in an article. She said that she was once invited to play the role-playing game Dungeons and Dragons. Do you all familiar with that? I don't know if you've ever played it, but it's role-playing anyway. Her middle school son, age 14, invited her to play, which she thought was quite an honor. So she spent a lot of time thinking of her character, which ended up being a little woodland elf named Lulu. When her son asked her what special power she wanted Lulu to have, Tandy said that she wanted the sound of her laughter to cause the defensive mechanisms of all those around her to be suddenly disengaged. She reports that her son stared at her for a moment, and then hand on hip and eyes set to roll as only a 14-year-old's eyes can, said, "Really, Mom?" But wouldn't it be amazing that the sound of laughter could instantly create a sense of safety and release? And isn't that already true? That often when we laugh together, it does work that way? That a moment of that kind of release can remind us of our shared humanity? And that's really what deep listening is all about. It's about remembering each other's humanity. Now, I did not expect a service about deep listening, about how to listen during the monthly theme that we're in, to take a turn toward the problem of evil. but it has. And I've learned by now to simply let go and follow the message where it leads, and you all have to come along with me. This time in history feels like what Joyce Sutphin was saying. This is your chance to listen carefully. Your whole life might depend upon what you hear. There's a whole branch of theological study devoted to evil. It's called theodicy. It's particularly challenging in liberal religious circles and in Unitarian Universalism in particular, because neither of our original denominations believed in the existence of a devil or an otherworldly hell, or that humans, any humans, are born inherently sinful. The old joke goes that Universalists believed God is too good to damn us, and Unitarians believed we are too good to be damned. Ultimately, most UU theologians answer the question of evil with a return to human responsibility. Evil is man-made, and hell or heaven is what we create here together on earth. And maybe even more importantly, it's not something that's separate from or outside of any of us. Remember my little process theology bit from last week. Creativity, creation is itself the ultimate reality, and creativity, creation is amoral. It could go either way. We decide. The UU minister, Eric Walker Wickstrom, speaks to the problem of believing that evil is something separate from us, not a possibility in us at all. He says, "For if they are evil and we are not, if that's how we see things, then we're committing the same kind of error which leads to tragedy. That's the problem of evil. Not so much that it exists, in that it's really just a fact of life or a force of nature. The problem of evil, as I see it, is that we're so readily tempted to imagine that it's out there, separated from us over here, that it belongs to them and not to us. And that, I believe," he says, "is ultimately the root and the design of evil. To make us categorize the world into us and them, rather than recognizing our common kinship." So evil happens, and hell is created when we forget that we're one. And I want to say that one way we can remember is through deep listening, listening to our own hearts in all its love and fear, all of its foibles and strengths, all of our own meanness and kindness, its tendencies towards connection or separation, and listening to others in a curious, surrendered, open listening for the ways that we are the same, listening as though our lives might depend upon it. The more we separate we find ourselves, the more room. The more separate we find ourselves, the more room there is for hell to manifest itself in our own communities and lives. Our lives do depend on our ability to remember that we belong to each other. I love historical fact / fiction novels, the ones where the author is very rigorous in sharing accurate historical dates and places and events, but creates this lovely, completely fictional story within the times. Usually for me, it's a romance. And one of my favorites is the Outlander series by Diana Gabaldon. Not the TV show. No. The main characters are the Scottish Highlander Jamie Fraser, who's the stuff of dreams, and who wouldn't want to be Claire Beecham Fraser, who's a doctor and a teacher and a witch and a time traveler, no less. I'm rereading the series again right now. The most recent 2 books out of 9 are set in the South during the American Revolution. And this time around, I think this is the 3rd time I've read them all, I find myself paying a different kind of attention to the story. I find myself looking for examples of how regular people, civilian loyalists, and American rebels got along and survived together. how they treated each other amidst the fighting and the war. What scares me most about what I read, this happened in Nazi Germany, we've got examples of it all over the place, but what scares me the most are the stories of how one day there were neighbors and friends, people who attended the same churches, people who were buying food in the same marketplace, folks who were grabbing drinks together at the local pub, who had children who were playing and learning together. And then, maybe what felt suddenly, but maybe slowly over time, these same people who would once smile and wave, who would come running with water when a fire happened, had devolved into the people who set the fires. These same people became willing to tar and feather someone who once printed their letters and mixed their medicines. They become people who are capable of vandalizing the very pub where they once laughed, celebrated, and mourned in. I know we have to keep working on the larger stage, voting and policy change, but this neighbor to neighbor is where I think we can have the biggest impact, where I think there's the most danger of creating hell on earth, where there's the most potential to create heaven on earth. It is right here with our people. The Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt, who's president of Star King School for the Ministry and contributes to the UU World Magazine, says that evil is not as complex as our explanations about it are. However we describe the means by which we experience evil, its source remains the same. It's our capacity to turn in on ourselves so completely that we lose sight of both our connections to others and to the greater source that binds us together. Whenever we forget who we are, whose we are, and what our relationship to one another is, there lies the breeding ground for evil. It is that loss of essential memory which leads to individual actions and collective structures that reflect and reinforce that terrible disconnect. Listen with your eyes, as if the story you are hearing is happening right now. As I look to history, I listen in the present as though it's happening right now. This is why the practice of deep listening matters. And I want to be very clear. I don't mean that you have to listen to people spout political beliefs that you disagree with or hateful rhetoric. I mean, in the how to listen part, listen with surrender and curiosity, full of presence and no agenda to the very real lives of our neighbors. Very real lives, asking questions like, how many heartbreaks have they endured? What illnesses have ravaged their lives? How many children or dogs or guinea pigs do they have? What's their favorite childhood memory? How do they feel about that beautiful garden they put so much time into, or that souped-up car that's always waxed to a shine but never leaves the driveway? Why do the things that matter to them matter? Who was the last person they helped? Listen with your head tilted and your eyebrows raised, without a camera or recorder. The way to listen is to ask questions. Don't expect answers. Be still and open so that the truth might show up and stick around. Refuse to forget our shared humanity. Remember that we are all capable of good and evil. Perhaps there's a God out there. Perhaps we call it love. When we listen deeply, we're acknowledging that we belong to that love. Whose are we? We are loves. And that is the love that is luring us toward heaven on earth, luring us toward peace and oneness. But this is the thing. It will not save us on its own. Unitarian Universalist theology rests on the premise that these human hands and hearts and minds, we have a responsibility to remember our humanity and our connections. And through that remembering, we say evil cannot pass, nor hell will manifest here, not in this time. May it be so.